You know, when you get into your car, you don't just sort of start the engine and sit there,
Right.
like hoping the GPS figures out where you want to go based on how hard you hit the gas or which way your head is turning.
Yeah, that would be terrifying.
Right. You type in the destination, the machine doesn't guess. It calculates the optimal route based on what you explicitly told it.
Yeah, it's a very clean, very comforting division of labor. You
Exactly.
supply the intent, and the machine handles the logistics.
But the wild thing is, the moment we step out of our cars and into our digital lives, that GPS model is just completely thrown out the window.
Oh, entirely.
We're living in a world where the internet is essentially a self-driving car with no destination path. It's just trying to guess where we want to go based on every micro movement we make.
Right, every click.
Yeah, every click. And that missing destination path is exactly what we're exploring today. So our mission for this deep dive is to dissect a radical new blueprint for human AI interaction.
And it is radical.
It really is.
Yeah.
We are looking at two massive, honestly fascinating strategic architectural documents from August 2026.
Yeah.
They're called the Build Something 10 Property Ecosystem Master Map V1 and the Build Something Master Document V2.
Right.
And we constantly hear about how smart AI is getting, but these documents, they sort of flip the script to ask, you know, what do humans actually want?
Yeah.
And how do we build a system that just asks us? So, okay, let's unpack this. What exactly is this Build Something ecosystem?
Well, it's really a fundamental rethinking of the architecture of the internet.
Okay.
The core thesis across both of these documents is that true human-machine alignment shouldn't be about building machines that are better at guessing our desires.
Right, guessing game.
Right. It should be about humans explicitly declaring their objectives and machines just performing the execution.
So back to the GPS model.
Exactly. And to pull this off, the documents outline a single underlying institution called Build
The
Something.
old something, okay.
Yeah. But the public doesn't interact with this, you know, monolithic institution directly.
Right.
They interact with 10 different doors, which are distinct properties or websites, and they all feed into one massive shared database called the Record of Humanity.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit more because before we get into these 10 doors and this massive database, I think we have to understand the disease this ecosystem is trying to cure,
Yeah,
right?
absolutely.
Because the founder of this system points to a massive flaw in our current tech landscape.
Yeah, and the flaw is what the documents call the inferred signal
The
economy.
inferred signal.
Right. So think about how the digital economy currently functions. Platforms watch us
Oh,
relentlessly.
it's exhausting.
It is. They track where we click, how many milliseconds we hover over an image, what we purchase when we pause or scrolling.
Yeah.
And from that mountain of behavioral exhaust, algorithms try to infer what we want.
They're guessing.
Right. But the critical distinction the documents make is that these platforms aren't inferring our desires to serve our highest goals.
No, definitely not.
They are inferring them to optimize for their own engagement or revenue metrics.
Right, which the text uses a great analogy for this that really stuck with me.
Oh, the restaurant one.
Yes, the restaurant one. It's like if a machine watched me browsing the internet for 6 months, analyzing my searches for commercial real estate, bulk food suppliers, local zoning laws, just to infer that I want to start a restaurant.
Right, taking all that computational power.
Exactly. It sends all this computational energy and data mining just to guess my goal when I could have just told the system on day one I want to open a restaurant.
Yeah.
Like, why guess when a human is willing to just tell you?
And that is the massive paradigm shift the documents are proposing here.
Moving to declared signal.
Yes, moving from an inferred signal to a declared signal. If you simply declare your goal, the machine doesn't have to waste time profiling you.
Right.
It can instantly pivot to execution. It helps you find resources, anticipates obstacles, connects you with the right people to open that restaurant.
I hear that, but I have a major problem with this premise.
Oh, okay, what is it?
Well, people are incredibly hesitant to declare what they actually want online, and for good reason,
For
right?
sure.
Because information creates power. If I tell a platform my deepest needs, my fears, or my exact financial situation,
They'll monetize it.
exactly. Historically, that data becomes a weapon. It's packaged, sold to the highest bidder, and used to extract value from me.
Right, it's used against you.
Yeah, like if I say I'm in debt, I don't get help. I get targeted with predatory loan ads.
Yeah, payday loans.
So how does this Build Something ecosystem actually solve that massive trust issue?
Well, this raises an important question, and it's the exact hurdle the documents spend pages and pages addressing.
Okay.
The solution they propose isn't just a, a fluffy PR promise.
Right, not just a terms of service update.
Exactly. It's a structural commitment to something they call non-extraction.
Non-extraction.
Yeah. The documents explicitly state that the institution will not extract private value from human data. The entire purpose of the organization is to be a steward of this data, not a broker.
So, meaning they aren't building the world's most valuable data set just to turn around and sell access to data brokers.
Precisely. The value generated by this ecosystem is structurally designed to circulate back to the humans who provided the signal.
Wow.
And the documents emphasize that trust in this system cannot rely on founder benevolence.
Right. You can't just trust one guy.
No, you can't just slap a "don't be evil" motto on the wall and hope for the best.
We've seen how that goes.
Right. The trust has to be hard-coded into verifiable rules and the architectural design itself, which we'll get into.
It really makes you stop and think about how much of our daily energy is spent just fighting algorithms.
Oh, it's a full-time job.
It is. Mm-hmm. Think about how much time you spend actively trying to train a social media feed, like liking things you don't even care that much about, just to tell the algorithm, please show me less garbage.
Yeah, you're just trying to balance it out.
We're managing the machine's inferences rather than just shaping our own experience.
It is a tremendous waste of human attention.
Yeah.
But recognizing that problem leads us directly into a massive logistical hurdle for this new ecosystem.
Which is?
If the goal is to get humans to explicitly declare their preferences, how do you do that without it feeling like an interrogation?
Oh, true.
Because if you just hand someone a giant philosophical survey about their values and goals...
No one is doing that.
Right. No one is going to fill it out.
Nobody logs online after a long day of work to take a standardized test for civic duty.
Exactly. And that is the exact reason the ecosystem is designed with 10 different doors.
Okay, the doors.
Yeah, the documents state that you have to build entry points based on what humans naturally like to do.
So it's the one system, 10 doors concept.
Yes.
You don't need to understand the grand philosophical architecture of the record of humanity to participate in it.
Not at all.
You might just be bored and want to laugh.
Yeah.
Or you want to play a game or settle an argument with a friend.
Right.
You walk through the specific door that interests you, but your actions inside that door are interacting with the exact same underlying institution.
Let's break down some of these specific doors or instruments, as the documents call them.
Let's do it.
The primary door, which is designed to drive a massive amount of daily engagement, is called News from the Joan.
News from the Joan.
Yeah. And it feeds into the larger build something daily ritual. Mm. It is, at its core, a comedy engine.
Yeah. The documents outline this concept of a daily minimum.
Right.
To actively participate in the ecosystem, humans are asked to answer three questions each day.
Mm-hmm.
What is funny? What is beautiful? What is true?
Yeah.
But I was reading this and thinking, why on earth start with funny?
It seems weird, right?
Yeah. In a massive architectural document about the future of human AI alignment, leading with funny feels almost childish.
It feels lightweight until you look at the underlying mechanics of humor.
Okay, explain that.
So the documents argue that humor is doubly fundamentally human. Think about what a joke requires to actually land.
Timing.
Timing, yes. Cultural context, an understanding of social norms, and the subversion of expectation.
Oh, I see. Let's test that. If I tell a joke to a room of 10 people,
okay,
three people might laugh out loud, four people might groan because it's a terrible dad joke, and three people might be deeply offended.
And critically, none of those 10 people are factually wrong.
Right.
Their reaction is a perfect, compressed data point about their taste, their background, and their perspective.
Oh, wow.
Humor is incredibly difficult for machines to generate perfectly from scratch because it relies on that shared, unspoken human context.
Right. Machines don't have a childhood.
Exactly. But for humans, evaluating humor is effortless. Asking what is funny generates a massive, rich data set of human preference without the user ever feeling like they are performing labor.
It turns entertainment into infrastructure.
Yes.
That's a brilliant way to frame it. The entertainment is the infrastructure. And that concept carries over directly into another door called Beat the Machines.
Oh, yeah.
This is a detection game where it literally asks the user, "Think you can beat AI?"
The mechanics of this door are fascinating.
Walk me through it.
The system presents you with an artifact.
Like what?
It might be a paragraph of text, an image, a piece of code, or even a joke from the comedy engine.
Okay.
Your job as the human is to guess, was this made by a human or was this generated by a machine?
Which reminds me of how CapKey CHAs work right now, but kind of inverted.
How so?
Well, every time we click those little squares containing traffic lights or crosswalks to prove we're human.
Oh, right.
We are actually providing free labor to tech companies to train their autonomous driving algorithms.
Yes, you are.
And we get nothing for it except access to a website.
That's a perfect comparison. Currently, our detection abilities are harvested for corporate gain.
Yeah.
But Beat the Machines turns machine capability benchmarking into a transparent public game.
Oh, I like that.
Right. Over time, the system isn't just measuring if machines are getting better at fooling us.
What else is it measuring?
It's measuring which humans are the most skilled at telling the difference.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and how our collective detection abilities change over time. It literally maps human perception.
So if Beat the Machines proves that certain humans have highly valuable specialized judgment.
Yeah.
How does the system actually use that?
Yeah.
Because that takes us out of the realm of casual gaming and into something much more competitive, which the documents call the Machine League.
Yes, the Machine League. What's fascinating here is that it's essentially a public sports league for AI models.
A sports league.
Yeah, and it completely rejects the current industry narrative.
Which is?
Well, right now, every major AI company puts out press releases claiming they have the single best AI.
Right, or they're the closest to AGI.
Exactly. But the Machine League looks at those claims and asks, best at what exactly? And according to whom?
Right, because a model might score incredibly high on a standardized bar exam. But if you ask it to write a creative short story, it sounds like a corporate HR manual.
Exactly.
Or I might be fantastic writing Python code, but its conversational tone is incredibly pedantic and annoying to actual users.
Yes. And that nuance is exactly what the Machine League captures.
Okay.
Inside this store, machines compete against each other on specific standardized tasks. But the critical mechanism is that humans judge the winner.
Humans make the call.
Right. A machine might win the humorous summarization category, but completely lose the strict instruction following category.
I see.
This creates a dynamic, multidimensional benchmark based on live human preference.
So it replaces those internal tests.
Yeah, it completely replaces the synthetic, often biased evaluations created by the AI companies themselves.
And when the stakes get higher than just benchmarking.
Real world consequences.
Exactly. When there is actual conflict, there is a door called humans must decide.
Yes.
And this is the ecosystem's accountability engine.
Right. So let's say an AI company makes a massive public claim about their new model's safety protocols.
Okay.
Or perhaps there is a highly contested outcome about a prediction a machine made.
My mind immediately goes to how this is handled today.
Which is a mess.
It is. We get an opaque corporate blog post. And then a million talking heads on social media arguing about it in an algorithmically manipulated feed.
It's just noise.
It's all noise. So how does humans must decide handle that differently?
It structurally removes the noise.
Oh.
The system doesn't just ask people to vote on a sensationalized headline.
Right.
The mechanics require the system to present the initial claim, the supporting evidence, and this is crucial, the absolute strongest, fairest counter-argument available.
So no straw man arguments.
Exactly. Only once all of that is presented does the system ask the human audience to judge what the evidence actually supports.
Wow.
It makes human authority concrete and organized when facts or consequences are actually disputed.
I mean, I follow the logic of these individual doors. You have games, leagues, comedy, debates.
Yeah.
But from a data architecture standpoint, I'm stuck on how you actually manage this.
It sounds chaotic.
It does.
Yeah.
You have millions of people pouring inputs into 10 totally different interfaces.
Right.
How does this all feed into the record of humanity without turning into a chaotic, redundant mess of a database?
Well, the documents outline a very strict architectural rule to prevent that chaos.
Okay.
It's called one observation, many views.
One observation, many views.
Right. It establishes a strict prohibition against what they call duplicate truth.
Let me make sure I follow this. So imagine a prism.
Okay, a prism.
The raw data, let's say a specific joke, is the white light hitting the prism.
Mm-hmm.
And the different doors are just the refracted colors. Like it is the exact same beam of light, just viewed from a different angle, depending where you're standing.
That's a great way to visualize it.
Is that accurate to the text?
Very much so. If a joke is submitted through News from the John, and then the community judges it during the Build Something Daily ritual,
yep.
And then a week later, that same joke is used as a test artifact in Beat the Machines.
Right.
The system is not copying and pasting that text into three different databases.
Ah, I see.
It is the exact same canonical digital object. The record of humanity simply records the different interactions humans had with that one object across the entire ecosystem.
That's incredibly efficient.
It creates a compounding, highly organized content system.
But if this database is compounding and tracking all of human judgment, that brings up a massive vulnerability.
What's that?
To maintain trust, the data has to be tamper-proof.
Oh, absolutely.
And the documents address this with what they call the append-only rule.
Yes.
The source text literally says nothing gets rewritten.
Yeah.
Not even us.
This is perhaps the most radical architectural choice in the entire blueprint.
Really? Why?
Well, in a standard database, if you update a file, the old data is overwritten or deleted.
Right. You hit save and the old version is gone.
Exactly. In the record of humanity, if a human changes their mind about a belief, or if a machine updates its prediction tomorrow,
yeah,
the old data is never deleted.
Never.
Never. The new data is simply appended to the end of the record.
Okay. I have to play devil's advocate here.
Go for it.
Because never deleting anything sounds like a moderation nightmare.
Yeah.
Like, what if a user submits something deeply offensive, illegal, or factually dangerous?
Right.
Does append only mean that hate speech just lives forever in the public record?
That is a messy reality of the rule, but the documents handle it through metadata.
Metadata.
Right. So if illegal or highly harmful content is flagged and removed from public view, meaning it no longer shows up in the user interfaces of the 10 doors.
Right. So you can't see it on the website.
Exactly. But it is not erased from the underlying database.
Wait, really?
Right. A new state is appended saying this content was restricted by this moderator at this time for this reason.
So the public doesn't see the bad content. But the historical fact that it was created,
yeah,
and the historical fact of who censored it is permanently preserved.
Exactly. It completely prevents hindsight bias and shadow banning.
That is huge.
You can't just quietly delete a bad prediction or erase an embarrassing mistake and pretend you knew it all along. History becomes a continuous, verifiable sequence of events rather than a marketing page that a tech company can edit whenever they have a PR crisis.
Which builds an incredible amount of trust.
Exactly.
And it ties directly into their AIR model. The founder argues that a trustworthy system actually has to admit its flaws openly.
Yeah, the text insists that system failures must become part of the historical record alongside human triumphs.
So even the bugs.
Even the bugs. If the database write path goes down and the system is broken for 3 days,
yeah,
the record reflects that failure. Even more profoundly, the system is explicitly designed to treat the concept of unknown as a valid functional feature.
That is so refreshing.
Isn't it?
Because if I search for something obscure right now, the algorithm panics.
Oh, it completely breaks down.
It does. It doesn't want to show me a blank page.
Yeah.
So it confidently hallucinates a guess or fills my feed with loosely related garbage. Just to keep me clicking.
Because current systems are terrified of empty space.
Right.
This ecosystem argues that if the machine doesn't know a user's intent, it shouldn't secretly fill the gap with AI inference.
It shouldn't hallucinate.
No. It should just return the value unknown and prompt the human for clarity. Honesty about ignorance is treated as a feature of alignment.
Okay, so let's zoom out a bit.
Okay.
We have these 10 doors collecting all this rich, explicit human intent.
Uh-huh.
We have an append-only database permanently recording our choices and our judgments.
Right.
We are creating this massive, unparalleled data set.
Yeah, it's huge.
But where is the money? Like, what is the actual economic value being created here?
Okay.
Because this brings us to a massive shift in how these documents view human labor.
Yes. To understand the economic engine of this blueprint, we have to look at the shift in scarcity.
The shift in scarcity.
Right. So for all of human history, production was the bottleneck.
Right, making stuff.
It required time and labor to write an article, to code a website, to design a logo, or to build a spreadsheet.
But the documents argue that as generative AI scales, that bottleneck vanishes.
Right, it's gone.
Because machine generation is becoming essentially free and abundant. If I need a piece of code, an AI can generate 10,000 variations of it in seconds.
And if generation is no longer the bottleneck,
right,
what replaces it?
Here's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah.
If machines can generate a million ideas in an instant, the problem is no longer creating things.
Yeah.
The new massive problem becomes, Which of these million ideas is actually worth pursuing?
Exactly.
Which piece of code actually solves the human problem without breaking the system?
Selection becomes the ultimate bottleneck.
Selection.
Right. As machine abundance increases infinitely, human taste, human preference, and human selection become the most scarce and valuable commodities on Earth.
Wow.
The documents call this paradigm the judgment economy.
The judgment economy. That makes so much sense. Think about the last time you spent 45 minutes scrolling through a streaming service just trying to find a movie to watch.
Oh, every weekend.
Right. The machine provided you with infinite abundance, thousands of movies instantly available.
Yeah.
But you lacked the judgment of what was actually good for your current mood. You were paralyzed by generation.
Exactly.
This ecosystem argues that your ability to finally select the right movie is mathematically more valuable than the platform's ability to host a million bad ones.
It completely inverts what we currently call the attention economy.
Okay, unpack that.
Right now, an advertiser pays a platform to force an ad onto your screen.
Yeah.
They are paying to interrupt you, to hijack your attention against your will.
Right. Pop-up ads, pre-roll videos.
And the platform keeps all the money and you just get annoyed.
Yeah.
But in the judgment economy, an organization isn't buying your forced attention.
Yeah. What are they buying?
They're buying the right to ask a question to the room. If a company wants to know which of their three new product designs people actually prefer, they can't just guess.
Right.
And they don't want to run a manipulative ad campaign. They pay the system for access to the room's collective judgment.
But the documents lay out a crucial foundational rule for this transaction.
Yes.
And it is, money can buy the right to ask under the rules. Money cannot buy the answer.
Yes, that is vital.
Because if a corporation could just pay $1 million to ensure their product was voted as the guest in the record of humanity, the entire database loses its value instantly.
It becomes useless.
Right. The independence of the human judgment is the asset itself.
And this emphasis on the value of judgment radically changes how we think about reputation, too.
Yeah, the documents outline a subsystem called the recognition market.
I love this concept.
I love this section, too.
Mm-hmm.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, think about how reputation works today.
Okay.
It's almost entirely based on proxies.
Proxies, right.
We assume someone is an expert because they have a million followers, or a blue check mark, or because they are wealthy.
Yeah, we use their status as a shortcut for their judgment.
Exactly.
But a continuous append-only record allows for reputation to be based on demonstrated history rather than social proxies.
Yes.
The system tracks a metric of who saw it first.
Right. If a brand new creator or radical new idea enters the ecosystem, and initially, only like 2% of the people support it,
mm-hmm.
but a year later, it becomes wildly successful, and 80% of people support it.
Yeah.
The Record of Humanity knows exactly who was in that initial 2%.
It has the receipts.
It literally does. It provides mathematical proof of who actually recognized value before the crowd did.
Right. You don't have to be famous. You don't need a million followers.
You just have a cryptographically proven track record of excellent judgment.
It replaces claimed authority with demonstrated judgment.
It's a true meritocracy of taste.
It really is.
Okay, so we have this ecosystem gathering the world's most valuable data set of human judgment.
Right.
Organizations and researchers are paying massive amounts of money for the right to ask questions to this room.
Yes, tons of value is being generated.
The inevitable question is, who reaps the rewards? Where does the money flow?
Which brings us to the governance and circulation mechanisms.
Okay.
Or what the text calls the anti-extraction paradigm. And the evolution of the founder's thinking between the V1 and V2 documents is really telling here.
Yeah, originally in the V1 map, the founder proposed a $100 million personal wealth cap.
Right.
The idea was that he, as the creator, would take profits up to that specific number, and every single dollar generated after that would go elsewhere.
Which sounds noble.
It does, but it has a flaw.
A big flaw.
Yeah.
The flaw is that a wealth cap still relies on the founder acting as a benevolent king.
Right. Deciding when he has had enough.
Exactly. In version 2 of the master document, that concept is upgraded to full structural non-extraction.
Structural non-extraction.
Yes. The system is structurally designed so that the immense value generated by those companies paying to ask questions must circulate directly back to the humans who provided the signal.
Circulation over extraction.
Exactly.
And the mechanism they propose for this isn't just a generic, you know, universal basic income dividend.
No, it's much more targeted.
It revolves around a concept called the life-changing number.
This is one of the most fascinating parts of the whole system.
Explain how it works.
So the system allows human users to voluntarily and explicitly declare two things.
Okay.
What exact amount of money would materially change your life right now? And what exactly would you do with it?
It's so beautifully concrete.
It is.
It's not some abstract wish for $1 million.
Right?
It might be someone saying, $700 would change my life because I could finally fix the transmission on my car and get to work reliably.
Exactly.
Or $6,000 would eliminate a medical debt that is crushing my family.
Or $50,000 would allow me to buy the equipment to start my own business.
Or importantly, someone might declare $0.
Yeah.
I currently have what I need, but I want to help direct resources.
Yes. By allowing people to explicitly declare these figures, the system creates a literal, real-time, global map of human need.
But how does this actually work mechanically?
What do you mean?
Well, if I just type into the system, I need $50,000 for a business.
Okay.
Does a magical AI named Vera just empty a bank account and wire me the funds? Like, what stops a million scammers from bankrupting the ecosystem on day one?
Right, the fraud question. The mechanics rely heavily on the AI assistant layer, Vera, acting as a highly sophisticated verification and matching engine.
So Vera's doing the legwork.
Yeah, exactly. Vera doesn't just blindly cut checks.
Okay.
If you declare a need for $700 to fix a car, Vera verifies the estimate.
Oh, I see.
She perhaps interfaces directly with the mechanic and ensures the funds go to the actual solution, not just into a black box wallet.
And it's not just matching money from the system's profits, right?
Mm.
It maps human resources as well.
Yes, entirely.
Like someone else in the ecosystem might declare, I have funding, or I have unused industrial equipment, or I have legal expertise.
Right.
And Vera can instantly route those available resources from donors to exact verified problems.
It's incredible.
It takes charity from a blind lottery and turns it into targeted peer-to-peer coordination.
But the circulation of resources is only half of the governance structure.
There's more.
Oh, yeah. The documents also outline how the machines themselves are governed by the public.
Okay.
This happens through a mechanism called prompts to the people, which serves as a machine constitution.
Right now, the foundational instructions that guide powerful AI systems, like how they weigh safety versus helpfulness or how they handle sensitive topics,
yeah,
those are written in secret by a few dozen developers in Silicon Valley.
Behind closed doors.
Exactly. And yeah. The public just has to deal with the consequences of whatever they decide.
Right. But Prompts to the People asks, what if humanity helped determine those underlying objectives first?
How does that actually happen?
The mechanics of this are quite rigorous. The public is presented with foundational trade-offs and asked to vote.
Give me an example.
So the system might ask, in a scenario where they conflict, should a machine prioritize absolute speed of response or absolute accuracy?
Okay.
Or should a machine be allowed to infer what you want? Or must it stop and ask for clarification when it's uncertain?
But it doesn't stop at just a philosophical poll, right?
No, it goes much deeper.
Because the public can actually see the literal machine instruction, the prompt code that is generated as a result of their vote.
Yes, total transparency.
They see the exact text being fed into the AI model. Then the system tests the machine against that new instruction, and humans must decide door to judge if the machine actually obeyed the rule they voted for.
It creates a closed, transparent loop of accountability. The humans declare the value, the machine is programmed with it, the machine acts, and the humans judge the execution.
You know, I have to admit, when I was reading through all of this,
yeah,
the immutable record, the rules of the judgment economy, the routing of resources by Vera, I had a serious moment of skepticism.
Why is that?
Well, this all sounds incredibly well thought out, but ultimately, isn't this just one tech founder building a massive, complex digital kingdom where he sits at the center as the supreme ruler?
Ah, the tech bro king.
Yeah. How is this fundamentally any different from the tech monopolies we suffer under today?
It's a fair question, and the documents anticipate that exact criticism.
They do?
Yes. It is the ultimate test of the system's integrity.
Yep.
The founder's authority is specifically addressed and limited in the constitutional rules of the system.
How?
There is a concrete operational rule that states the system should be able to prove the founder wrong.
Which is a great soundbite.
It is.
But how does that actually work in practice?
It works through the same mechanics we've been discussing.
Yeah.
Okay. If the founder proposes an objective for the system or writes a specific machine instruction, he is treated by the system as just the first challenger.
Just another user.
Exactly. If any other member of the public submits a better question, a more efficient objective, or a stronger counterargument,
yeah,
both are presented to the room. The evidence is weighed and the humans vote.
And if the room votes for the challenger's idea, the founder loses.
The founder loses.
The new objective takes over the system, and the founder's loss is permanently recorded in the append-only record of humanity for everyone to see.
Exactly. The text makes a profound point here.
What's that?
A system that can only prove other people wrong is just propaganda.
Wow.
But a system that can structurally prove its own founder wrong is a durable institution.
That is a critical distinction.
It really is.
So what does this all mean? Like, when we zoom out and look at this entire Build Something blueprint?
Yeah.
It's a wildly ambitious attempt to solve the AI alignment problem.
Ambitious is the right word.
But it doesn't try to solve it by locking developers in a room to code better ethics into a black box machine.
No.
It solves it by making human desires explicitly clear.
Right.
By creating an uneditable history of our choices, and by ensuring the massive economic value created by our judgment circulates back to humanity rather than being extracted by a platform.
It really challenges the listener to evaluate how they interact with technology right now.
Definitely.
Like, are you explicitly declaring your goals, or are you just lazily letting algorithms infer them from your worst habits?
Yeah.
Are you actively defining your own destination, or are you letting the machine guess where you want to go based on your behavioral exhaust?
Which brings me to a final provocative thought to leave everyone with.
Okay.
It stems from one of the systemic properties we touched on earlier, the idea that machines will soon solve problems faster.
Right.
The documents argue that as machine intelligence continues to scale, AI will very soon be able to generate brilliant, comprehensive solutions to complex problems in mere seconds.
Meaning the generation of solutions will no longer be what holds humanity back.
Exactly. If a machine can give you the perfect answer instantly, the only real bottleneck left for our species will be defining the actual problem.
Wow.
As AI solves everything faster and faster, will the ultimate, most highly valued human skill simply become our ability to agree with each other on what problem is actually worth solving in the first place?
If the machine can drive the car perfectly, the only thing that matters is making sure we typed in the right destination.
Precisely. Thanks for diving deep with us today.